Welcome to episode 4 of Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard Brookman, along with Mickey Colwell and Royce Kitts. Today we're going to be looking at Library Wars and Criminal Sinners.
I can see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye.
Royce is going to pick up the first part of this, but before we get into the reviews, anybody has you read or watched anything? I know I've watched a little DVD last night called Superman Shazam. God, I can't talk today. Superman Shazam, The Return of Black Adam. It's a bunch of DC short featurettes that they compiled into one disc. They did have these at the two-disc collections of some of their straight to DVD movies, and they created a fourth one with the Shazam, and then they put the Jonah Hex, the Green Arrow, and the Spectre on this DVD as well. This is one where you can get some of the lesser known DC characters in an animated adventure. It's kind of a cool concept. Whether they'll be able to go forward with this or not, I'm not sure. I can't say I was too crazy about the Superman Shazam title. Jonah Hex was pretty much a typical Western. I'm afraid I'm not a Western fan, but I enjoyed it. Spectre and Green Arrow, my wife and I both love these two characters, so even she enjoyed those two. And the Green Arrow was just lighthearted enough, and the Spectre was spooky enough that it caught our interest. And then besides those four shorts, they also had four shorts from previous animated shows that featured these characters as well. It's one that I think the library could probably purchase and put on their shelf if they didn't get the two-disc collections of the previous DC animated movies, so they wouldn't have these shorts. So that's one way to get the shorts onto the shelf. This format, I think if they're not careful, it's going to die, though. They're going to have to put some recognizable characters in here, too. I know they're trying with the Superman, with Shazam, but even that did not really jump up and grab me, and I'm a comic book person, so they're going to have to spruce it up a little bit more, I think. Have you guys watched this, or did you watch any of the animated movies with the shorts on them? Hello?
Our silence speaks
volumes, apparently. Must not have. Golly.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm an animation fan, so I'm afraid you're going to have to deal with animation with me. Not just the Japanese, but the American stuff. But this is one that, you know, if you don't have the shorts on the dual disc, this might be a purchase that the library might want to consider to put on the shelf for the graphic novel and animation fans that you have out there. What about you guys? What have you been rolling in this month?
Well, you know, two of the movies that we've been watching in my house, my son, who's 7, he's a lot like me in that, you know, you see a good movie and you want to watch it 3 or 4 times. We've been watching Due Date with Robert Downey Jr. and Zach Galifianakis a lot lately. Maybe, you know, for a normal 7-year-old, not entirely appropriate, but my son being my son, we get a kick out of it. There's a lot of really good sight gags in it. Just a really funny story. Another all ages kind of movie that we've been really into lately is called Megamind, and it's the story of a villain and a hero who kind of share a parallel life for a while, and then the hero decides that he's done with it, and then kind of the evil guy becomes the hero, and it's told as like a superhero thing, but it's kind of a love story in the background, and it's kind of a story about a character who discovers that he really does like who he is as a person. It's a wonderful story. But yeah, Due Date, Megamind, loving them right now.
You're doing the comedies, are you?
Oh, that's all we, you know, my family, we are all about comedy. You know, we watch cartoons, comics.
Oh, well, you didn't watch my cartoons.
And stand-up comedians. You know, and, you know, that's the beauty of comedy, though. There is so much out there. You know, it runs the gamut from Aziz Ansari to Larry the Cable Guy. You know, that's, comedy is that wide. So it's an all-comers get something they like.
I think the upcoming one that my kids have been looking at and kind of saying, we might want to see that, is that Paul? Have you seen any trailers for that yet?
No, I haven't.
It's about an alien that comes down to Earth and comedy ensues. And I think my daughter, she watches that commercial, and every time she says, he's a lot better than E.T. What about you, young Mickey?
Well, I haven't watched any movies, so I don't have much to contribute.
Golly. You just work, 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 work?
He reads comics.
Yes, 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 yes.
Oh, man. I feel sorry for you. Got to take
don't
a
feel
break.
Sorry for him. Oh. Don't feel sorry for him.
His break's coming up at conference, right?
Sure. He's pretty close to the ultimate break.
And if y'all didn't notice, we are all Kansas librarians, and our annual conference is coming up here at the 1st of April. So that's the reference to the conference. So, okay, I guess we're ready, Royce, if you want to roll with Sinners.
Yeah, definitely. Let me start talking. If you're not familiar with the Criminal Series is a group of stories put together by writer Ed Brubaker, who you might be familiar with. And I was first introduced through Captain America. And I can't remember the exact title of that series. Mickey might be able to help me out with this one. But it came out a few years ago, and it's pretty good. And then the artist, Sean Phillips, they've put together, we had talked in the previous podcast about crime fiction. And this is a more modern version of crime fiction, but it still has that mythology that we associate, you know, with a really urban, gritty crime stories, you know, lots of violence, but, you know, then there's this code that people live by, and, you know, the police live by their code, but so do the criminals in this one. This one follows the main character, Tracy Lawless, who's a hitman, and kind of takes on a little bit different role here. A subplot being, you know, that, you know, he's a former military person, and he's being tracked by this person who is an army investigator. So you have these parallel stories going right here. And one of the things that I definitely enjoy about this is the stories. You know, this is something that I wouldn't say that this is for kids. You know, this is definitely for adults, and that's the appealing nature of it. There is some pretty brutal violence that takes place in it. But, you know, the stories are very wonderful to read. Do you need to read them, you know, from volume one through volume five till you get to Sinners? No, I don't think it's necessary. In fact, I didn't realize that there was an underlying storyline going through them, because these are things that I don't realize, unfortunately, until I've read the fifth one. And then I realized that, oh, yeah, this is a character that's run throughout the series. So, you know, would I suggest reading this? Sure. I think it's wonderful. The best part of this one, I would definitely say, is just spending more time with that main character of Tracy Lawless, getting to find out more about his history. And, you know, one of the great scenes in it too is him running into a nun in a seedy hotel in the middle of nowhere. It's just really great stuff. You get more in tune with the main character of Tracy Lawless. Just a really wonderful, gritty story that I would suggest everyone read. It's turned me on to other stuff by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. You know, I'm real slow on the uptake on this stuff. They've written a story called Incognito that is more of a superhero related story, but it still features that really good artwork by Sean Phillips. And, you know, I would say in combination with the stuff that I've been reading in the Criminal series and then the Vertigo Crime series, and then, as we talked about in the previous podcast, Richard Stark's Parker series, my taste of where I used to say that I was always into superheroes and that kind of stuff, you know, I think I've found my new niche, or my niche of the month, which is crime fiction. Just really looking forward to discovering more and more of this stuff as we move along.
And I think I'm like you, Royce. I knew him more from Captain America than anything else prior. This is, again,
and that title's Death of Captain America.
And he's been writing the series for a while. I'm not sure if he still is yet. I would have to dig through some of our stuff to see that at the library here. But I want to say he might still be writing some of the Captain America series. It's definitely a different tone. You can tell that, you know, this is one of those where he's letting loose, where in Captain America, he has to rein it in. So, and the main character, if you really look at him, could almost be a Steve Rogers. He's got the crew cut. He's a blonde. He's statuesque.
Yeah, you know, I love in these stories where the bad guy is always this very broad shoulders. always a trench coat, you know, kind of that Sin City look, you know,
right.
And then the crew cut, and then always, you know, some big, huge gun. So that's probably why I like it so much, is it reminds me of the Sin City titles. You know, obviously the artwork in Sin City is some of the best ever.
Right.
But this stuff in its own right just is really good.
And this is one where we talked about last episode about Richard Starks Parker, and this one has color in it. So this one I was able to jump into a lot more easier.
It's a lot more traditional than right. The Hunter is, for sure.
But it's definitely, like, you come in, it was definitely for adults. And
yeah, it's definitely for adults. You know, this is a title that you send home. You know, there's going to be people who are going to have some issues with this. So it's one of those things where I would, before you put it in your collection, make sure you give it a look through and see where you decide to put it.
And I think with the bigger collections and the more metropolitan towns, it wouldn't be a problem. With me out here in Southwest Kansas, there's a few scenes in here that's like, ooh, I'm not quite sure that will go over with my community. I think about 3 or 4 pages, probably about 10 pages in when they're in a church.
I definitely think that's an opportunity for us as librarians when we're talking to people who might have issues with these kind of materials, is to underline the fact that, you know, hey, these are for adults.
Oh, true.
We buy other books for adults too, and we buy books for kids. Right. This one happens to be just for adults.
And I don't think it's the violence. The violence is fine. It's the sexual content that's in some of it. And it's not through the whole thing by any means. I'm not trying to portray it like
that. That's our
culture. True.
Our culture is violence is always okay. A flash of anything sexual in nature is always going to be problematic. And the same with language as well.
Right. But as a story as a whole, I mean, it fits. Everything fits. I love he has his own code. And if you cross, you know, if you cross him, woes be ho unto you. But if you have him as a buddy, or what the closest thing could be a buddy, he'll stick up for you. And
I think in terms of storytelling, you have to have that kind of code, or you're just talking about someone who's a psychopath and you're following them around. It doesn't become endearing without that code that they live by and that integrity that, you know, even though they're committing crimes, they still have about themselves.
I want to make a comment about the technical execution of this book. You mentioned the colors. It is a color book. Val Staples is the colorist, and I think it's one of the most amazing coloring jobs, because if you look at any page in this book, he manages to convey a lighting just through his color choices that is absolutely amazing. I mean, there's talk about spotlighting and below lighting and top lighting. All of these color choices are basically add this three-dimensional quality to the art It's just absolutely spectacular. It's one of the best coloring jobs of any graphic novel ever. And I think that, you know, Val Staples is one of those people that does these great jobs like Jose Villarubia or Dave Stewart, this new group of young colorists who know how to use the digital medium to do all this stuff. And I just think it's something that you have to pay attention to when you read this book, because it literally jumps off the page at you. And if you look at it very carefully and analyze how the colors, you know, bring the story to life, he's as much a player in this as Brubaker and Phillips.
Definitely, with all the shadows that are going on, like I said, spotlighting. Like I said, to me, for some reason, I think it's the color. Like Roy said, it's the color. Just let me jump into it a whole lot faster than Darwin Cook's. It was one of those where, I don't know, it appealed to me because it was an adventure, and I think that's what grabbed me as well. It was more of an adventure where the Hunter was an adventure, but it was, I don't know, it didn't have the same feel. I can't describe it.
Well, not to keep going back to The Hunter, obviously, is a book that we've really enjoyed.
Yeah, but it's a good compare and contrast, though.
The Hunter is a book that is almost has like a snapping rhythm sound to it in the background. You know, like the way that he goes from one image to the next, you kind of feel like this. There should be really light, cool jazz playing in the background. Whereas, you know, the background music for this that you kind of feel as you're reading it has more of that. I just want to say Hill Street Blues all of a sudden, but you know, more of that kind of more of an urban feel than in terms of the what's going on in the back of your mind as you're reading it versus the other story, The Hunter.
And you can definitely tell the code is a little bit more looser for the mob-esque figures than what it was in the previous one. They do have their codes, but you can definitely tell it's a darker story. Maybe that's what I'm getting at. I don't know. It's a darker society now.
That's something that happens in the criminal series in general, is a lot of the storylines are based on the fact of what happens when the code breaks down. What happens when people do things that they're not supposed to do or they don't have permission to do.
So maybe that's it. It's an everyday person falling into it.
Yeah, the code is breaking down. And as in, you know, The Hunter, you only imagine the people that are in that world knowing any of this kind of stuff. And then in the criminal series, these people are touching the lives of ordinary people as well. So it becomes a little bit darker because there's a possibility that the innocents get pulled into it.
That works. Like I said, I couldn't describe it, but you did a good job there. Thank you. And I think this is one that I would personally have, but like I said, with the sensitivities in my community, this is one I'd have to think about before I actually purchased it for the library because of the more modern take, and it's definitely a more violent. With you, you're closer to a more urban setting, so I think you'd probably fare better with this than I would. Aren't you close to Manhattan in Kansas, Manhattan, Kansas?
I'm right in between the town of Lawrence, Kansas, and Kansas City.
Oh,
Kansas.
Lawrence. My apologies. Got the wrong town.
Oh, no, I don't. You know, it's okay. I don't buy into all that interstate rivalry kind of stuff. Yeah. But, you know, it's the same issue that we have with a lot of other graphic novels.
Okay.
There's going to be someone who has a problem with it. But, you know, the people that are going to have a problem with it, they're not walking straight to it.
Right.
And if it appeals to you, you know, it's one of the kind of beauties of graphic novels and something that I often quite joke about with people, which is, it's wonderful because you can judge a book by its cover. You know, it's in regular fiction titles, everyone has gotten into this really heavy block print on the front and then kind of this woodsy scene. So you have no idea what the book's about. You just think it looks cool because everything's in great big huge letters. But, you know, with graphic novels and comics, you know, you really do get a sense for what the book's about looking at the cover of it. So for these, I think people would look at them and go, yeah, this probably isn't for me. But you know, people who are into this gritty crime stuff, you're really missing out if you don't give the criminal a shot, the whole series. I've read all five titles of the series, and I think it's wonderful.
And I think this is the second one to feature Tracy Lawless, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, the first one's called Lawless, which not hard to tell that one's about him. He's on the cover, too. And then this one right here.
And they
have, you know, the whole series has really good, they all have awesome titles. There's Coward, The Dead and the Dying, which I think is one of my favorite graphic novel titles ever. And I'm trying to remember what the other one's called. There's one called Coward as well and Lawless, but I can't remember what that fourth one is.
And I think right now they're just available in the collected trades. I don't think they ever went out in hardback, did they?
I haven't seen a hardbound.
No. Well, actually, there is a hardback edition of several of them, but they started with Coward. They're all on the back of the trade if you have it in front of you. Coward, Lawless, Dead and the Dying, and Bad Night editions.
Gotcha.
And they are being collected in an omnibus edition in hardbacks. So
okay.
Very well thought of.
So if you wanted to wait a little bit and get all of them all in one shot, you could wait for the omnibus then. Because that'd be, what, five volumes in one book?
Yep, that'd be a good deal. For me, it's always difficult. Okay. You know, like I said, I just read these things. I don't have a tendency to understand. You know, it's a problem I have with, like, Walking Dead. They've collected them in a couple of different formats. So I'm like, okay,
which one do you choose?
Which one am I supposed to buy here? You know, and
I think it depends on your usage. Like with me,
yeah,
I'm able to get by with most trades and they'll last a good while. I mean, 3 to 4 years. I'm not having any difficulties with that. We've been fortunate. But I know other libraries have mentioned that the trades tend to fall apart, especially in the bigger communities and city areas.
Well, I think you want them to fall apart, don't you?
Well, true, you do.
That's how you know they're getting read.
True, but if you can save the budget a little bit by doing a hardback.
That's a give and a take. You know, do you want to spend the extra money for the hardback and then hope that nothing ever happens or let people read the heck out of it? You know, the one thing that I always hate is when I go to a library and their mode of fixing them is just pouring big, huge globs of glue down it and then just cramming the pages back in there. Anytime someone can self-weed an item for me, I'm fine with that.
And that's what we do. It's the self-weeding thing. If it's too far gone, it's deleted. And if we think we need a new copy, we do. If not, we buy something new. But I enjoyed it. Like I said, it's one of those that the genre is not really my most favorite, but I enjoyed both of them for different reasons. I had to take me a little bit of time for the Parker series, but this one I was able to jump right into and enjoy it. Like I said, just there is a difference in tone in the books that is definitely there, and you feel, for me, put it that way, for me there is. They were both good experiences. Mickey's being real quiet today.
Well, I'm just listening to what everybody has to say, and, you know, I think we all have sort of different takes on this genre.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think this one, after reading this one and some of the other titles, I think this is what I'm going to start searching out and then see where that leads me. These stories, I think, you know, if you're looking for someone who's wants a little bit change up, maybe wants something a little bit different, this would be a great title to suggest for them.
I'd like to thank one of our sponsors at this time, Music Alley from Mivio. Andrew Levin's song Train of Thought was provided from Mivio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.mivio.com. That is MUSIC.MEVIO.com. Or you can go to our site, Comic Pop Library, for links to Music Alley and or Train of Thought by Andrew Levin in our reference links located within our left navigation bar. And now, back to the show.
Well, to go on to the next one, Library Wars, Love and War. It is by Kiro Yumi, and I'm afraid I'm still torturing Royce with the manga. Really tortured him this time around because it is a Sojo Beat manga put out by Viz. So, we got to read another girl's comic. I'm sorry, Royce.
Well, I accept your apology.
I know it's not your favorite cup of tea, but I do read a little bit of everything, the Sojos and everything. But the story basically revolves around a young woman, Kasahara, who's just finished a school to be a librarian. And she has an instructor, Dojo, that pushes her, gets her through the school, almost browbeating her through the school. And it kind of reminded me of The Lovely Complex or Love Calm. The girl figure in this one is really tall, and the instructor male figure, he's really short. And it was the same dynamic in Lovely Complex, and they just bicker and banter. You know, eventually, it's one of those you pretty much read into it. Eventually, they'll get together at the end of the series, more than likely. But the unique thing about this one is the title, Library Wars. That's what drew it to me, because we are about the library community. And this one is a love story. It's definitely there, but the background story is kind of interesting. It's basically, the main gist is the federal government in this world has created Media Betterment Committee. And this committee exercises censorship over all media to include anything that it deems offensive in books. The local governments or state governments have set up armed units to fight censorship under the Library Freedom Act. And these are called the Library Defense Force. They actually carry around military weapons. These libraries are the only place where books of any type can be collected and checked out to the locals. Defense Force does protect the library. That's why they have the weapons with them. So it's kind of weird seeing librarians carrying around guns. I don't know if that'd be too safe in some of our libraries. They might turn them on us as their bosses. I don't know. Have a bad day, and it could really be a bad day. The title is geared definitely for a younger woman. The males can probably get into it because of the military aspect of it. My son read this. He was able to read it, and it wasn't really for the action. He read it. He liked it because of the comedy. It wasn't the love story or anything like that. It's just the comedy that was in there. One of the things in the first book, I think it was a children's book that they kind of spotlight, and these are not necessarily actual books. They are fictitious to the story itself. The committee that goes around doing all the censorship collected a children's book where animals talked, and this young lady that's the lead in the book was reading one of these books when it was pretty much yanked out of her hands by this committee. And the reason she went into the library profession was because a librarian was there, and he confiscated the book and placed it in the library and pretty much told her she could check it out there, which, of course, here you get all the sparkles and all that flowery stuff that goes along with the Sojo mangas when there's a love interest type deal. But she doesn't know who this person was. She never saw the face. And it's pretty heavily influenced on who it is when you're reading the story. So you think pretty soon those two people will get together, but this is their journey to that point in time. I did happen to read the second book, and it kind of dealt with a person that was arrested for raping and killing women. And when they went to the house, the committee went in and saw what type of books he had on his shelf. And then they basically blanketly placed all the titles that he had on his bookshelf as offensive without even looking at them or seeing what the content was. It was just a blanket. This is offensive now. So it's kind of one of those stories where it makes you think, well, do we really want this type of thing to actually happen? And could this actually come to pass in our day and age, which you hope will not, but there's always a possibility of somebody coming in and challenge a book within a library. I think some of the librarians in the back of their minds are kind of saying, and it'd be nice sometimes to have backup, like a military organization to help you out. But all in all, I enjoyed the book. It's definitely one that's geared for, like I said, the young women. It is a right-to-left read, so you do have to read it from the back to the front. The art style is pretty much normal fare for a manga. Nothing too outlandish or different from any other manga book you're going to pick up. Because it deals with censorship issues, You know, it is geared for an older teen. That's what it's rated. I think a younger teen that has the maturity could handle the themes, but because it deals with the censorship issues and romantic issues as well, some of the middle schoolers that aren't as mature as others might not really enjoy this one, but definitely upper middle school to high school, I think, would enjoy it. Let's see. And it could possibly spark some discussion about censorship within a school setting, possibly, if that would be used as a topic for a school project and what could possibly happen if things went too far. I enjoyed it. It was, like I said, it was fun. It was like, where's my M16? It's not in the corner of my office, that's for sure. I haven't held one for nigh on 15 or more years now. So my daughter liked the book, but the first thing she saw that kind of turned her off was the military aspect. And I kind of had to tell her that, you know, this isn't strictly a military book. This has a relationship in it. And once I told her that, she read the story. And she enjoyed it at that point. So one of the hurdles that this book might have with young women is the way it's portrayed on the covers. It kind of looks more like a boys' comic rather than a girl's, but it is actually a love story. It just has that military aspect to draw in the boys as well. What about you guys? I know, it, like I said, Royce, I already apologized to you. Do I need to apologize to you too, Mickey? Looks like Mickey's lost us.
Well, you know, like I think it is important what you had said about the audience for this book. And that was, you know, the main issue I had was, you know, I was just not the audience that this book was written for. And that's fine. You know, that's just the way it is. You know, that's in terms of manga, I'm getting used to it. But, you know, for a story like this, it just wasn't ever going to happen. It just wasn't going to be something I was going to be into when I was reading it. So, you know, like you said about the artwork, pretty standard fare. I would probably recommend it because, you know, our manga readers here at the library, they're voracious readers and they will read anything. Not to say that this is so bad that a normal person would read it. It's definitely one of those things that, you know, I would definitely see teenage girls really liking this title.
Did we get Mickey back? I tried calling him back. Are you there, Mickey?
Yes, I am. We were disconnected for a minute. Sorry.
No problem. Do I need to apologize to you too? That's what I was asking. He is really quiet today.
No, you don't have to apologize.
Am I going to have to change my flavor for you guys?
You know, you did mention one thing I would like to talk about for a second, which is, you know, since we are doing a concerted effort with this podcast to reach out to librarians, is we should consider from time to time talking about some of these issues. How do you deal with censorship at your library? How do you deal with the challenge to a book? And how do you get over this whole idea of self-censoring? I think those are some real issues for us, you know, all of us involved in this podcast. We all understand and value the importance of comics and graphic novels and manga and whatever you want to call it. But for a lot of people, it's really fresh territory and it is a really great unknown. So I never take it too lightly when we have to run into these kind of issues when we're talking about comics and graphic novels.
And I think most of you talked about the self-censorship, but kind of that we kind of do because you have to look at what your community's into. Before I put in graphic novels here, I tested the waters to see if they would even go over. And the board wanted to see statistics to see if it warranted putting in a collection or not. For a rural town, a rural setting, that's, you know, that is a hurdle. They looked at everything, and once they saw that it was viable, they said, okay, we can run with this. And I think that's where the, I don't know if you're really being a censorship, but being aware of what your community wants and trying to purchase for them. But at the same time, you still have to get a little bit of the books that might not be pleasing to everybody, because we do have wide ranges, even in our small town.
Yeah, there's a book out there called Gravel by Warren Ellis. And that was the first time that I ran across a graphic novel where I was like, you know, I wish I could get my money back on this, because there is no way that I, with a straight face, can, you know, if you ever want to see where as far as people can and take it with sex, violence, and all that other stuff, it's definitely worth a read in that regards. But it's probably the top end of the scale where people, I can't see any library taking that title and saying, hey, let's put that in there. You know, so there are those kind of titles. There are those situations where you realize that this just isn't what we're about as a library.
What a,
those are tough calls. I try not to make those calls too often.
And one of the things that floored some of our readership here is at the end of 2009, I believe it was, we have a group of middle-aged to younger women come in and ask for paranormal romances. We had bought a sprinkling of them, but we never really bought a whole lot of them. But when they came in and requested that, we said, okay, let's test the water. And once we did, these ladies were coming in and saying, okay, we need this title too, and this series, and this series. You know, there are pockets within your community that you have to be aware of, and sometimes you're not until they come forward for to you that you don't realize are there, and not everybody's going to join. You know, we had one lady come in and says, what happened to all the general fiction? And he's like, well, it's still there and it's still coming in, but we're trying to buy little of everything for everybody. And most people, even though they might have a little bit of a grumpiness, that I think they do understand that. And if you approach them on a level where that's not condescending, not looking down on them in any way, just, you know, just in visiting and being on their same level. And I said, we know you like this type of material. We are still getting this in and point it out to you. And we always have the back stacks where we have the books that you might not have read that of authors that you're unaware of, and we'll lead you to those as well. And one of the other areas that was unheard of in our community was the general readers, I think they're called, like the Janet Oakeys, Karen Kingsbury's.
Gentle Reads.
You know, before I came here, they just had one little carousel. The two staff people that were here when I came on board asked, could we explore this? Just like we explored the graphic novels, and we did, and they are now a good collection within our library as well. So sometimes you got to search out some of the genres that are missing. And like we're supposed to create a balance. I think we've done that as much as we can here. Mickey's still being awful quiet.
You know, one of the interesting things about Gentle Reads, you jogged my memory of an article I read a couple of years ago about the uproar in the Gentle Reads community, because some of the labels, some of the publishers and some of the authors had started to explore more risque storylines.
Yeah,
language.
I remember that.
And it's like, so basically you're talking about... just regular books.
I remember that as well.
You know, I worked with a lady, and her job was to sit there all day, and as she was doing other tasks, to listen to every single book on tape that we had, and then to check it for language, because there were some patrons who were just really quite upset. One of the things I remember is about a patron that came in here to my library. He had talked about a Western, and he's like, I opened this thing up, and there was curse words right on the very first page. And when I was finished with it, there was curse words on every other page. You know, so it's like, you know, there's always what might offend you on a superficial level, but, you know, you still enjoy the story.
So right.
I always take it back to the story when people have issues with language. The story is what it is, and language is just how the story is told.
Well, we had one person came in. It's kind of the same time frame that you're talking about. It was Mel Odom, I believe the author's name is, and he did an NCIS series through a Gentle Read publisher. And most of the Gentle Readers usually are fairly heavy into a religious background, and they mention the Bible quite a bit or some type of worship services within their books. And she came back and she turned it in and says, you have this in the wrong spot. And I said, well, it's from a publisher and it's a regular Gentle Reader author. And she goes, but they only mention God once in the whole book. And I was like, well, they're not really religious books. They're stories that just have cleaner language, not as much sex, if any sex, in them. You know, it's just a cleaned up story. That's what it's really geared for. But she was upset because they only mentioned God once in it. So that was, I think that's about the same time you were talking about when they were experimenting with the different titles.
Yep.
So we are getting off. We need to swing back around. I think Mickey scared away in.
Yeah, we definitely went down a tunnel, and maybe it is time to get back here to what we're here to do.
Basically, with the two novels we reviewed this time, the Library Award is definitely for a higher middle to lower middle school, middle high school level. Perfectly fine for that. Sinners, good story, great artwork. I'd be within the adult collection somewhere. What about your feelings, you guys, on where you would place these?
Yeah, sounds right. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, we talked about it, and I think that we were kind of all in agreement on that. That's the beauty of these two stories is it's really easy to know where to put these.
Definitely. And to wrap it up on our tips and tricks segment, don't know if any of you guys have anything, but I do have something. One of the things that's we always get questioned about when we go to conferences is, where do you put these books? And we kind of discussed this in the last episode a little bit as well. But for our library, and for each library, it's a little bit different. You'll have to just experiment within your own library. We have created a separate section completely for our graphic novels. We have one that is in our adult collection. We would have one for the young adult, but it's so small we do not have room. So the young adult and adult is kind of a combined collection within the adult area of the library. And then we also have one in our children's section for titles that are geared more for children, sixth grade and under. But the main thing people always ask is, okay, how do you catalog these? And it's not really a cataloging issue to me. It's more of a shelving issue. We still catalog everything how we're supposed to, but where we put the location, we kind of get specific on where we do place them. We take the mentality, if somebody's going to come in to a store and they're wanting to look for something in the hardware section, they want to go to the hardware section. And if they want to look for screws, they want to go to where the screws are located at. We take that same mentality with the graphic novels. We have our graphic novels separated out. Within the graphic novels, we do not shelf by the author's last name, because if somebody's coming in and would like to just read a Batman story, they might have to look throughout the whole shelf to see where the Batmans are, which could have its advantages, but in our community, they want the one-stop experience, so we just collect everything on the shelf in Batman. If it's Superman, it's Superman. If it's Spider-Man, it's Spider-Man. One of the things we do is the nonfiction. That is at the very front of our graphic novels. We do not Dewey them or Library Congress them. It's just we leveled them with a GN-NF for graphic novel nonfiction, and with those, we do use the author's last name to shelf those. So that is what our library has experienced and how people like to search for their titles when they're looking for graphic novels. I don't know if you two can expand on that and how you might be a little bit different than what we are.
I think the important thing to remember is when kids grow up, they're growing up with these things and they become teenagers, and when they become adults, is are they able to figure out that you got these different areas in the library where you've a lot of libraries tend to scatter them in all kinds of different areas of the library depending on the kids, and kind of don't want the kids to have to run across any of these kind of titles that aren't meant for them. It's a difficult task, and I think that's just one of those things to remember, is you just got to put some thought into it. And as librarians, the good thing to know is that we're not the only ones out there, and there's lots of people out there, and find out what your neighbor's doing and ask around.
Anything on your end, Mickey?
No, I think you all covered it just fine.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank everybody for joining me again today. We are missing Venus again. She still is under the weather, so we're hoping she will be ready and roll on episode 5. So wish her well wishes and to get well soon. We appreciate everybody that listens. Spread the word about us. We have our webpage at comicpoplibrary.com where you can see the show notes, where you can get the ordering information, where you can get other links, blogs that we post that are geared more for librarians, but everybody's welcome. We have our Facebook page where you can like us and get the feed straight to your Facebook and check it that way if you would like. We definitely enjoy everybody that listens, and let us know what you think. If you are listening out there, we'll keep doing this as long as we can. As long as I've got some people that will talk with me, I'm more than happy to be here and talk about comic books, because this is what I enjoy doing. And for me, everybody, have a good week. Have a good month. You guys, take care.
All right. See everybody bye-bye. Later. Bye-bye.
All right. I can see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta keep on anticipating, cause it's sure. The moment that I don't want
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use on our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any comic book publisher or distributor and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official site links of review publishers can be found on our website, www.comicpoplibrary.com. The views and comments of the Comic Pop Library host are not necessarily endorsed by the Finney County Public Library, Kearney County Library, Northeast Kansas Library System, and/or Tokonganoxie Public Library.